Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We're back to our regular scheduled programming, back to a Tuesday. We had the bonus episode with Scott on Friday. Go and listen to that. We had JJ last week as well. The run to the draft continues again today with a bit of a different approach to the 2024 presumably terrible rookie running back class. If you missed it today, Scott Barrett's 2024 pre-NFL draft rookie tight end dynasty rankings article dropped for free because we are psychos at fantasypoints.com and only want the best for you. This man poured probably 90,000 words into this article and some poor soul had to edit it. So be sure, go over and check this article out. It's everything you need to know about the tight ends this year. I, of course, am your host with the most Thomas in hands. I am Thomas Hibble. You can find me at El Nostra Thomas. And my fun fact of the day, with WrestleMania just finishing this last weekend, I hold three victories over another company's co-owner in Kenny Omega of AEW.
I'm Jacob Sanderson, and my fun fact today is that the Astrodome, the legendary Astrodome, first place ever to use AstroTurf, officially opened, had its first baseball game played on this day, April 9th in 1965.
Oh, damn. Damn.
Nice. I'm Lucas Gilbert. You can find me on Twitter at LGilbertFF. My fun fact, speaking of Astro, is that the next solar eclipse is going to be August 12th, 2045. And I've been very lucky to be pretty much in the direct path of the past two. So that's been cool, but not the next one. That one's going to be way out west. So,
and I'm Graham, joining these lovely gentlemen tonight. I was just in Thailand, so I figured I'd bring a Thai fun fact.
Damn right.
And I found out that Thai alphabet has 44 consonant symbols. They have 16 vowels. So there's a total of 32 vowel forms. And basically, depending on where you're at, I found that it's kind of like the North and the South in America. There's definitely, you know, dialects in the way things are said. So a lot of difference in just a, such a small little country. Quite enjoyed that.
That's crazy, man. How you were still finding a way to like get any work done while you were over there. I saw you like tweeting about the draft class while you were over there. It's like, why are you working right now, man?
Yeah, look, the grind doesn't stop.
You're addicted to the grind, Graham.
Dude, we had auto renew during my trip. So we had a busy time. But it was a good time. Great time though.
Yeah, I'm glad you got it out. The way they have you working like a dog is probably just felt nice to just disconnect at least a little bit while you are out there, you know. And shout out to the girlfriend for being okay with you working while you were on vacation. There's no shot. that would be going down. So
I had to lay it out a little bit. I was like, look, we're gonna have to pull aside a little bit, but for the most part, I'm gonna be able to get away. The wedding was great though. We got our longtime friends married. We've been friends with these people for like 15 years now, since like middle school and high school. So it was a good time.
I love that. Look, we've already got a quick question. Andrew, sit around towards the end. We're going to answer as many questions as we can fit in. I'm sure one of us here will have a sleeper for you that won't be just the same one I keep mentioning every single show, who will likely end up being a bust anyway, but I'm going to draft him no matter what. Okay, let's dive into it. So obviously the fantasy world was sad when Yards Created didn't enter everyone's inbox this last year. A lot of things changed, and when I tell you, I mean it. Discords that I have been in, it felt like a Yards Created day where everyone was speculating why it wasn't coming out. So everyone's really excited that knows about Yards Created, but can you tell people who may not be as familiar with it, or may not even be familiar with where the idea came from?
Sure. Yeah. It was like losing a limb last year, not being able to do Yards Created. I lost my film source, and then it was like really late in the year, and I just had a lot of stuff going on and just kind of had to push back. But yeah, man, it's back. Yards Created is back. This will be the seventh draft class I've done in the last 8 years. I'm going to go back and back chart 2023, which is exciting too. So we'll have the full data probably by June. But Yards Created is basically my attempt at not divorcing running back play from offensive lines, but better understanding it. And the way I think and the way I try to explain Yards Created is it's very simple. You know, PFF, Sports Info Solutions, everybody's tracking yards after contact, but after contact yards are just that. It's just what happens if a running back gets touched by the line of scrimmage, if a defender touches them. Yards Created is basically a way to think of second level yards, or basically what happens after a running back forces a missed tackle. And the way I think of it is, like, for example, I was actually just watching, finishing up Audric Estime yesterday, and I was just thinking to myself, man, he just doesn't make very many guys miss behind the line of scrimmage. But then there's guys in this class like Jalen Wright, who's like making jump cuts behind the line of scrimmage. And in PFF terms, you wouldn't get really any after contact yards for that. Yards Created does. It does assign yards for basically what happens if you force a missed tackle by elusiveness, by speed, or basically what happens when you get to the second level and you're, you know, one-on-one at a linebacker. Are you going to get tackled for 0 yards created? Are you going to get behind the guy? That's basically the nuts and bolts of Yards Created. I watch every carry. I will say it's gotten a lot better going back, thinking back 16, 20, 17 days when dudes were getting like 300 carries. It's definitely a lot easier to watch Marshawn Lloyd's 100 carries, I'll say. That being said though, this is a wide open running back class. So
was it like 45% of your charting this year was just Blake Horn's carries, and then the other 50%
class? Yeah, he definitely took the longest. And I'm gonna go back and rewatch pre knee injury 2022, I guess that would be, but
yeah,
he definitely took the longest. And he's, you know, he's like the only guy in this class with like a legitimately full production profile, but it's a wide open class, and I'm excited to talk to you guys about it today.
Awesome. Can I ask a question too? Is Yards Created exclusively additive, or if someone makes like an egregious decision and like there's a lane someone could go through for whatever reason, they bounce it outside like a dumbass, they get tackled for 2 yard loss. Can you have yards uncreated?
Yes. Yeah. I chart uncreated yards as well. It doesn't usually go more than like two. There's been a few egregious ones where there's like 4 or 5 yards lost. But yeah. Yeah. I mean,
first
I think
carry that makes for Trey Benson against Florida. How many yards did he uncreate?
Yeah. He had a few, man. He has a few space cadet moments every game. He was actually the first guy I thought about too. He's probably the one guy. If I went back and through my charts and then just looked at negative yards created plays, he probably would have them. But he also has probably some of the most explosive ones too.
Yeah.
No, that's phenomenal. I think it's important to know, because a lot of people talk about, well, if he had this O-line, or, oh, everything can be attributed to this offensive line, when really it's really not that cut and dry. I think
it's definitely not. And it's a totally different game in college. I mean, we forget that the hashes are just massively spaced out. It's a totally different space game. Teams are using a lot more gap concepts in terms of the blocking. You see a lot of gap, and you know, obviously the Rams ran a ton of duo with great success last year, but you'll see just so much more gap because, you know, the defensive ends just have so much more space to operate. You know, see offensive lines using a lot more creative and different concepts than you will in the NFL. And you know, I mentioned it off the top, pretty much all these teams are going to committee backfield. So it's kind of also making the sample size a little bit smaller, but this is a fun class, man. I do think it's a fun class. At the top, I got Trey Benson at RB1. I've been going back and forth on this for quite some time. I think Benson just makes the most sense at the top. You were mentioning, Jacob, that he has some just like wildly like space cadet plays where it's just like,
For the record, I have him RB1 as well. So acknowledging that he like loses his mind
It's just like he blanks out a couple times a game. He just like forgets where he's going, but when he knows where he's going, it's awesome. He is a typical, like prototypical one cut slasher kind of running back. He reminds me of Travis Etienne the way he wins. One cut speed, get up field. Obviously Florida State ran a ton of the pin and pull, you know, gap stuff. Travis Etienne is awesome. Pin and pull gap, but you know, obviously, you know, I think 2022 Benson was probably slightly better in terms of elusiveness. He didn't score overly well in my numbers, just 0.28 missed tackles forced per attempt. But like I said, really strong yards created, especially given the context of the offense, and Florida State's offensive line was really good. But Benson is my RB1 in this class. After that, I've got John Brooks at RB2. Brooks, super, super elusive. Obviously doesn't have like the big speed, the big home run speed like Trey Benson does, but the vast majority of his missed tackles that I charted were by elusiveness. Very, very quick feet, quick cuts. We're talking about guys that can create yards behind the line of scrimmage, and Brooks is certainly one of them. Thomas, where do you have Brooks, and how do you have the top of this class right now?
So for myself, I have Brooks 1.
Nice.
Because I really believe modern technology, the injury that he suffered, I don't think is as destructive as maybe it might have been in the past. And Brooks feels like the guy that isn't really hampered by system dependency. Like you said, where Benson's is that one cut kind of guy. There's some systems you just don't want him in to function well. I think Brooks is the guy that you have to coach the least. When healthy, I feel like he's the most kind of sit him in and plug and play, and he can kind of do all the things at least okay, if not great. So less, like you said, less of the explosiveness, maybe less of the true 1A back size, because there's no such thing as bell cow size anymore. You're either 1A or 1B size. Like there's like five teams that run the workhorse, so you got to fall into that. But two is Benson for me. There is a lot of yards left on the table, like you said, which is why I can't wait to really put that onto a page. So those are my 1 and 2. As for the rest, I've draft capital is going to decide it for me at this. Like, I don't know. Like, this is a very difficult class. Like you said, you like Wright, but yet the amount of bodies in the box for him in that offense. Really, he saw the most open field off snap, like off rip. He got the most wide open looks almost as any back in the class, because that offense is a bit of it's a gimmicky offense. I'm interested to hear how Lucas has the top of this class right now, because Lucas is the Devy college guy. We're speaking his language right now. So I have very much standard dynasty brain on this. So I'd like to know, Lucas, how do you have the top end of this class?
So just to provide a little bit more context with Jalen Wright against the box numbers.
Right.
He doesn't run against the box, like with a whole bunch of men in the box just routinely. So I would take that with a grain of salt. I'm very happy whatever he has open grass in front of him. He absolutely just eats. Yeah. And you were talking about a one cut runner. That's Jalen Wright too. With the top of the class, I'm still going with Benson and Brooks. And then it's just whoever you like that comes to your pick, you just pick up whichever one's left, because there's a lot of fairly good running backs that you can throw into that next tier. With Trey Benson, I'm looking at him and he just reminds me so much of DeAndre Swift. And I don't know if that's good or bad. We've liked some of DeAndre Swift's career. We have liked that he is a fantastic athlete who happens to play running back, and we just want to see the ball in his hands more. I have a feeling we're going to be saying that a lot about Trey Benson too, and then go and look at his PFF grade and just shy away a little bit because it's going to be a lot of red. But, you know, that's just part of what it is. I've really struggled, though, with coming up with a comp for Jonathan Brooks. And part of me is a little bit nervous because Texas has just a really good offense. They're really good about scheming holes for their runners. And I know he's not the second coming of Bijan Robinson.
Right.
He's just not, even though his numbers look very similar. So he makes me just a little nervous.
Okay. But
right now, I just can't come up with a comp for him. And then it's going to be kind of a tier of Jalen Wright, Marshawn Lloyd. And just because I want to make sure I say his name as somebody I'm definitely targeting, I can't talk tonight. Isaac Garrido. That's another person all of his metrics look good.
You guys
good.
Both love his this Garrido guy, hey?
Yes.
I don't even have him in my top. I don't have him in my overall 200. I'm not succumbing to the wind. Not sort of running backs, obviously. Players.
It's gonna be terrible to watch you end up on the wrong side of history, my friend.
He like never got the ball. I have Benson one, but I have Brooks like literally not only one spot behind in my running back ranks or even my overall running back ranks, but like in my overall dynasty. So like it's literally I have them back to back. So it's almost a meaningless distinction. I did my ranks in two stages this year where I went first film grade only and then went to like building in the rest of the production profile. And it ended up being like three stages with Benson and Brooks, where I had a slightly higher film grade on Benson, then incorporating sort of the rest of the analytical profile. I liked Brooks a little bit more, and then incorporating the he doesn't have a leg. I went back to Benson a little bit more. So like, but I wanted to try and like ignore the ACL first, because I wanted to try and narrow down like exactly how much of this ranking comes down to the ACL. And it comes down a bit. I'm excited to hear you so high on Benson, though, because like I have a type at running back, which Benson's very much of. And like I've always been a very big Travis Etienne guy, and I've made this similar comp, I think, even like on the show last week. And you know, a lot of film analysts have not been and loudly not been fans of Travis Etienne in the past either. So hearing you come in and at least like validate what I'm seeing on Benson has been great, because the podcast cycle on this show and on other shows that I've gone on is like the Benson believer. I felt like I've had to be in like a defensive stance whenever I bring him up to some people because he's mistake prone. And I mean, I agree he's mistake prone, but I see so much more creative juice in the open field in terms of not just being able to make guys miss or break tackles, but capitalizing on that into actual home runs. Like not just turning, like I feel like a lot of the evasion metrics we look at in the community are metrics that talk about turning 5-yard runs into 10-yard runs or 10-yard runs into 20-yard runs. And I think Benson does really well at that, but I think he does better than anybody in this class, with possible exception of Jalen Wright, is turn 5-yard runs into 50-yard runs and turn into touchdowns, you know, on any occasion. And I think that that's hopefully, in my view, gives them more fantasy outs, even in the receiving game, where I don't see him as like a route runner, but I see him as a guy that if I was coaching and I had Trey Benson on my team, I would throw him two and get him out there with a convoy and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got the calling card of speed, and you know, I don't think anybody else in this class really has that. That being said, though, you made a point. You know, it's the 5-yard runs and the 10-yard runs. It's not just that; it's like the 2-yard runs that he turns into 4, because he's got such good contact balance, and he's constantly fighting for extra yards. I think Josh Norris calls it hidden yards. I love that. He is the king of hidden yards in this class, Trey Benson. For every one run though that he has, where it's just like, okay, you're a space cadet, there's like 4 where it's like, holy shit, his understanding of how to like set up blocks, especially in pin pull, and you know, if there's just one puller, like, man, he has such good patience, and he's just like electric in the open field. Like he's gone once he gets a little bit of grass. Jalen Wright has that too. And those are like the two guys, if you want to like earmark in this class, that have the home run ability. The one guy who doesn't is Blake Corum to me. I'm not even gonna have Corum in my top 5, man. Like,
really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, man. 3.35 yards created per attempt. Second worst in my database.
How much of the 20 is that all 2023 or is any of that 2022?
All of 2023. Yeah. I'm going to go back and back chart 22. Just, I want to know the comparison. Probably will be after the draft because I won't have time.
Yeah.
But yeah. Quorum. Really poor yards created per attempt, 3.35, 0.15 missed tackles forced per attempt, second worst all time in my database since 2016. Ooh. Yeah, it's
Dave,
rough. Man.
Dave doesn't like that one. He's a big Quorum guy.
It's rough. He's a one speed type runner, and I did not see a whole lot of elusiveness from him. He's 205. He's got good contact balance for his size, but he doesn't run with a lot of power. The speed on the edge is good. I think he'll be okay in like outside zone stuff. But again, he's very undersized. I think he just benefited from an awesome offensive line.
My numbers are kind of
showing that too.
My pitch for Quorum, and I'm somewhere in between. Like, we had Noah on a while ago who has Quorum RB1, and you have most of the top five. I'm somewhere in the middle. I have him RB3, but in tier two with Wright. I have two and then a group of the rest. And my pitch would be that his 2022 numbers on his evasion rate, on his explosive rate, are much higher than his 2023 numbers. He's playing in 2023 off a significant. And what does maintain to me when I watched both years is that, at least in my opinion, he just consistently makes really good decisions and really has an understanding of where the play is supposed to go, diagnoses it correctly. I think he's a guy that coaches will really like. I enjoy sort of the cerebral aspect of his tape. I agree. Like, I had him and why he ends up below Brooks and Benson, even just in my film grading, I have a really low mark for him on contact evasion. I have a really low mark for him on speed, especially in the open field. And I think he's athletically limited. The question is, how much of that was the injury? How much of that is just him to me? Because if it's the injury,
or
that's at least a big part of that, then I think you have potential to just really live out a career as like a really strong rusher, even if the rest of the game is a little bit limited. If it's all just who he is now, or if it is the injury, but he's just never getting better from the injury, which is also possible, then you're dealing with a guy who, maxes out as a college running back and will be a great running back coach.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's good enough all around player that he'll be somebody that coaches like, but fantasy players hate. Like, I can see him mapping out a Devin Singletary-esque type career in the NFL where everyone's just kind of annoyed by him. He feels like he's holding some running back that we really like back, but he's just productive enough to kick around because he can pass pro. He can do all the little things that coaches just talk about, first guy in, last guy out, real lunch pail kind of guy.
I heard a Miles Gaskin comp, by the way, the other day. That one really hit for me, actually.
Oh, oof. Wow. God, they are so similar. And they both are so undersized too. Yeah. Damn.
Underwhelming and undersized. They're is
like
not
really productive great college prospects.
Yeah.
Like, who played like a long time and like undersized and like probably know how to play the position better than they're able to play the potential.
Yeah. It's like their brains are better than their athletic ability. I will say, Quorum did have a decent like combine though. I mean, for his size, he ran a decent 3-cone, like 90th percentile, I think, if I'm remembering right. So, it just didn't show up on tape, though. Right.
So with Blake Quorum, whenever I'm looking at him, especially with the 2022 tape and just the way we're all kind of feeling moving forward after a combine, after a senior year, seeing that dip in production, if there's a running back who's most likely going to be the next Kyren Williams, because that's all everybody's talking about is, I got to find the guy that they leave for dead in rookie drafts and I can pick him up off the scrap heap. I think Blake Quorum has the best chance to do that. We're not going to be looking at similar draft capitals, I don't think. He also has much better size for his height than Kyren Williams did. But just the general feeling from the fantasy community about where they have Blake Quorum versus what he was able to do when healthy, that's who I'm kind of likening him to as potentially becoming that kind of running back. So he's not left for dead. Yes, I'm drafting Jalen Wright. I'm drafting Marshawn Lloyd over him, but he is definitely someone that I'm looking to pick up, especially if you can get him at the end of the second round.
The problem is there's still a possibility that he goes to a nut spot and get
he's a Charger. We all know he's going to be a Charger.
But that's
LA Charger. Blake
I am trying. I am trying to not just hand that to him. But what scares me is that he can go there and he's just going to get moved up so far up in your rookie drafts that it becomes scary to pick him even in that spot, in my opinion. But it just it shows it's a testament to the class. Right. If you look at Dynasty Data Labs ADP, the first rookie running back off the board isn't coming until the eighth round. Like Jonathan Brooks is the first running back off the board for rookies, and it's the end, it's the last pick of the eighth round.
Yeah. Some of that is people coming around to me and being a zero RB bro and just never investing in running backs ever again. We've all been burned too many damn times, but
we're still getting like Kyren Williams is going in the fourth round. Achan, ETN still going in the fourth. Yeah. Barkley's moved back up into the fifth. Like people are buying running backs right now at a rate that is kind of unusual considering how bad the dynasty landscape is with running backs right now.
I think it's just pushed up. I think it's pushed up the extremely valuable top end guys to a point where
that makes sense.
Where it's like, it's become a scarcity thing.
Arguably four of those.
Which, yeah, exactly.
Which makes those guys really valuable. Like the only running backs I want to roster in Dynasty right now in the top area of drafts. Like I'm totally willing to pay up big time for Breece and Don. I like 100%. But like, I don't really, and I mean, I've been like a Travis Etienne guy my whole life, but like, I don't really want to live in like the Etienne Walker Kyren range of dynasty particularly. I don't know that I want to expend that much capital. I don't know what to do with Achan because like, he just, I don't know what am I to do with this profile? He's scored, like, it's the reason why I normally don't want to invest in that level of asset is usually that's an asset where we're talking about like not a ceiling that's that substantial. There's all these running backs that go way, way lower that are way, way cheaper. You can get, you know, your Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, James Conner, all these guys totally for free. So why would I pay up for ETN at a first round value? With HN, like the ceiling is not in question. The question is like, will he play three consecutive games? Like can he sustain this on a workload? So I have no idea with him. He lives in his own world. But the rest of these running backs in that tier, I agree. Like I want to be basically getting like one of Breece or Bijan on any team and then just like three dust balls and kind of call it a day.
Yeah. I would throw Gibbs in that Bijan, Breece.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're not in the same tier, I don't think. I think you're right there, but I would throw Gibbs in that and that's it. I was thinking about this in the shower today. I was like, man, there's like the last 8 years, six, 7 years, like really the only running back that has consistently held value throughout that time is Christian McCaffrey. And like, there was obviously some major, major, you know, red flags and down points in that time. But Lucas, you brought up Kyren Williams as a comp for Corum. And I think in terms of size and athleticism, it makes sense. But I went back through and looked at my charting. Kyren Williams literally doubled up Corum in terms of missed tackles forced per attempt. 0.28 to 0.15, so nearly doubled them up. That was the most shocking thing to me with Corum, because I mean I'm not a huge college football fan, but obviously watched Corum in 2022, and when I watched him and charted him, you know, as intimate as I get, you know, watching each play, that was the thing that stood out to me the most, and maybe the most surprising thing of this class is like I really think that injury just robbed him, man. Like, and you mentioned it, Jacob, that, you know, there's a chance this is just who he is now. And if that's the case, like, we really just need to kind of like readjust. You know, it sucks.
The hope is that the combine suggests maybe it's not, right? Maybe this is two rose colored glasses, but if we have the 2022 film, which is pretty promising, 2023 film, which is a bit of a bummer, and then we have combine data that doesn't match the 2023 film, hopefully, you know, we have some progression in health between January and April. And I find it hard not to root for Corum because I like players like that. Like I feel like a player who, you know, consistently makes good decisions, who is like been the bell cow for their team. Seems like a really like high character, does whatever you want, gets the dirty yards type of guy. It's impossible for me not to root for that guy to succeed.
He's a winner.
So, you know, hopefully it happens for him, but you never know.
Well, the other thing too, interesting with the Kyren and the Corum is Kyren wasn't left for dead until the combine. Like his agent should have just told him not to run.
Yeah.
And then people still would have loved Kyren Williams. He only got shot down boards and left for dead because his combine was just so, so bad
Yeah, 465, right? 465, he's like 190.
195 at 190.
Yeah, it was terrible. And then he got – this is one thing that scares me about the draft class, right, is this draft class has us chasing some outliers. Like, Achan's an outlier. He just is, right, size, whatever. But his production plus his usage is outlier-esque. With his situation, you get Kyren falling into just an unbelievable Todd Gurley workload, just out of nowhere that no one expected. And I feel like people are going to chase that now. But with Corum, it's kind of the other way around, where we saw his film, people kind of like him. And like Jacob just said, his combine is actually giving us hope. So it's kind of a tale of two spectrums in the combine battle.
Who's the rest of your top five then? Because we talk about Vince, we talk about Brooks. Corum's not in it. Who are your other three?
Yeah. So I've got Benson, Brooks. I like Marshawn Lloyd, man. I got him at three. I got Wright, Jalen Wright at four, and Estime at five.
You know what I really like about you, Graham, is like of that? The running back film community, you like the fun players more than everybody else. You do.
Hey, look, I'm always for fun. No, it's the truth.
You do. Like you're like, yeah. The guys that are that have like really fun physical traits, who create home run plays and
they score well. Blocks.
And yeah. Hit home runs, like, and the ones who, like, you know, you'll get like finger wagged by some people, be like, this guy, like, ran through the B gap. We're supposed to go. You always like these guys. That always gives me hope. It makes you believe in a better world.
Look, I don't give a shit if you ran through the wrong gap. If you got a 30-yard gain, you turned a 3-yard play into 30 yards. It's Kenneth Walker's. That was the whole reason I like Kenneth Walker. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, he bounced through our outside, whatever. But he ran past three dudes, like, yeah, I mean, those guys are always going to score well in yards created simply just because the way I chart it, though. And that's why I'm always like caping up for those guys. So for like every Kenneth Walker, there's always going to be Rashad Penny, where he's like, you know, yeah, he was running through massive holes, but yeah, he was also beasting dudes in the open field. And like, was fun.
Like, Rashad Penny was good. He just like couldn't stay healthy, but
yeah,
he's good.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to talk about a guy with no legs. That's Rashad Penny at this point.
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Marshawn Lloyd is fun. Like, Jalen Wright is fun. It's okay to write like fun players. And I think with Lloyd, the thing that stood out to me most is obviously just 115 carries. USC, they were like the ninth, eighth most pass heavy team in college football last year. They only had 10 or more carries in 4 and 11 games. Like, every single time he got the ball, that dude was like, not only was he elusive, not only does he have great speed, like, he was seeking out contact. If he had to lower his head and get more yards, he was going to get it. I mentioned hidden yards with Trey Benson. I think Marshawn Lloyd is probably number two in hidden yards in this class. Fantastic yards created score, 5.66 yards created per attempt. He's going to lead this class in missed tackles forced per attempt by a mile. Marshawn Lloyd. Yeah, loved him. But again, it just comes back to, okay, he's kind of 117 carries. He's a transfer from South Carolina. So he's basically just a 1-year starter. The tape was great. The tape was awesome. The yards created figures are really strong. I have no idea where this dude's going to get drafted. Like, I think some teams could be like, look, he's only got 117 carries on his odometer. We see that as a positive. Some teams might view that as a negative. I would have a late day two grade on Lloyd if I did grades, but I could see him being a fourth or fifth round pick too, just because this class is this class. But Marshawn Lloyd's my three, Wright's my four, Estime's five. And you could debate me on Estime versus Corum. I'm not super stoked on Estime. I think it's just more of where I'm at with this class, but I really did enjoy Jalen Wright. Again, small sample, not a ton of carries, you know, obviously he has the game breaking erase of, you know, angle erasing speed, but man, his full speed one cut jukes are sick. Like, you were mentioning it a minute ago, like, okay, yeah, sure. He had a really good offensive line, like by my metrics, third best offensive line in this class so far. And really, really close to Blake Corum, by the way, Michigan had the second best offensive line. So yeah, line was great. That being said though, man, I mean, he got green space and one-on-one in a one-on-one situation. Like, he's getting past that guy. Really good. I think in pass protection too, sneakishly good. That's going to earn him reps. One thing I forgot to mention with Blake Corum that I wanted to talk about is he is the best pass protection guy in pass protection in this class, by my scores too. So if you want to put, you know, kind of a little bit of a green flag on something that might get him some snaps early. That's, you know, pass protection for Corum, because most of these
guys
are pretty
bad. What does that bet in on the Blake Corum mythos, right? Like, it's just, of course he's good in pass.
Yeah, of course he's good at that. Like, he seems to me like he was probably Harbaugh's, like, coach's pet. Like, he probably just, went everywhere he went. Man, Jalen Wright is curious, though. Obviously, he's gotten steamed here a little bit, really coming up in Dynasty ADP. But, I mean, I still think he's relatively cheap to a point where there's still a good bit of upside left.
My take on Wright is that it'll be, I think he's one that I'm a little bit more scheme dependent and draft capital dependent on than the others. Cause I just think naturally, like, of the three backs, I consider somewhat of a similar type, like him and Benson and Lloyd, who are all these like really athletically gifted running backs who don't have as many college carries on their resume as you'd like to see projecting a workload. I would say Wright is the one, absent any other knowledge about draft capital, about, you know, team, whatever, is the one that naturally I feel the most concerned about getting a full workload, just in terms of like what I see and how they play and with the size aspects of it. So to me, it's a matter of like, can he be in this, either does he just get drafted in the second round, which he would be a team saying like, we disagree with you and we think he can handle the work. All right, wheels up. Or does he go to a scheme where I think he's going to be used in a way that he can score a ton of fantasy points per touch, you know, in kind of like a Miami type of mold, like we saw with HN last year, where, you know, it was like borderline projectable that his potential to score like a ridiculous amount of fantasy points per touch was in there. And I think with Wright, where that comes down to, for me at least, and maybe you disagree, I think once he gets ahead of steam and he's in the open field for a guy who, and I know he weighed in at like 215, I don't think he weighed at that weight, but I see a guy like in the open field. I think once the head of steam, he has pretty impressive power. Like, he can actually run with a really impressive amount of physicality with linebackers or second level secondary defenders. I think when he gets stifled at the line of scrimmage in like the occasional reps where there's actually a crowd at the line of scrimmage between the 5-0 linemen and 3-D linemen, I think he runs with very little power in those scenarios. And so I think, like, to me, if I'm a team employing Jalen Wright, I want him to be like the outside zone half of my committee, get a full head of steam, go run, make things happen on the outside, toss him some swing passes, toss him some screen passes, all that jazz. And I agree with you. I've heard differing reviews on his pass protection. I had him graded pretty positively as a pass protector, at the very least as a willing pass protector. And I think he has totally fine hands. So I think with Wright, I'm a little more scheme dependent. With Lloyd, it's like, I don't know if he has the cerebral aspect of the game down to be a reliable 20 carry per game guy, but I think he has the physical ability to. So I think, like, if theoretically he got coached up, or if he landed with a coach who, you know, prefers someone where the hits outweigh the misses, I think it could work. I think it's a little more coach dependent. With Wright, I just don't know, like, if he's a guy that you want taking a ton of inside carries, if that's an appropriate way to use his skill set.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the ways he was used too. Like, Tennessee, like you mentioned, man, I mean, they just were running into space. You know, it's a part of their scheme, obviously, so spread heavy. But also, I mean, they just were never under center. So that was a big part of it too. So there's a little bit of like selection bias, I think, going on with the Tennessee offense.
And not only never under center, like, they rarely use a tight end. The receivers are split like 2 feet from the boundary. Like, it's just, it's literally like 5-0 linemen, whatever the defense throws, it's usually five guys to match. And it's like, do you win your blocks? Like, just go crazy.
Yeah. Well, when you get these light fronts now, and it's the right move, all these coaches are just like, screw it, we're just going to have a flood. We're just gonna run a flood, basically pin and pull on every single play, and just basically clean these dudes out on the edge, because, I mean, there's no one there. I will say, your point on Marshawn Lloyd in terms of like overall completeness as a prospect is completely fair. I think of the six guys we've talked about tonight, like, he's probably the guy who has the widest range of outcomes, like I was mentioning.
Some ball security concerns too with him, right?
Yeah, and I usually don't care too much about that.
But
when you have a situation like where it's like Marshawn Lloyd and he's never really carried the load that often, I do think it does matter a little bit more. That being said, though, I mean, the physical traits with him just stood out immediately. Yeah. You know, you can watch two games and just, you're like, holy shit, this guy's like, in terms of physical ability, like, there's no question. It's just, I think everybody besides Benson, and honestly, just Benson to me, really, everybody in this class is way more draft capital dependent than I've felt about any class before. To me, honestly, this class reminds me a lot of the 2014 group that was like just, it was Bishop Sankey class. And like everybody hyped up Sankey because he got pushed up the board, but like he was trash anyway. Like I think this class is a little better than that, but it's very similar.
Well, I think this class is more role dependent than I think previous before. Like when you say, you know, ball security concerns, you know, not really something that matters. It matters that much if Marshawn Logan goes in the fourth or fifth round and he chokes it up a couple of times and the coaches go, you're done, sit down.
Yeah, I mean, matters. How many times have we seen these fourth and fifth round guys just get, you know, abused and reused, and you know, they got a new fourth, fifth round guy in there the next year.
Exactly. So
yeah, RIP Damian Pierce for that reason.
Out of fall.
Jacob and Lucas are mourning. Sorry, I cut Lucas off. What are you gonna say?
So I was gonna say with Marshawn Lloyd, to try and make you feel a little bit better, to alleviate some of the concerns, the 2022 at South Carolina, like more context behind that, like,
we lost Jacob. He'll be right back.
Whenever he actually was healthy and was given the opportunity to carry the ball, he was extremely effective on a team that had a horrific offensive line and up until the very end of the season didn't know how to complete a forward pass at times. Like, it was so just ridiculously bad, but he has shown the ability to carry a team's offense in games whenever everybody knows they're going to be running the football, and he can still go out and get positive yards. He's done that several different times. And then whenever he moved on from USC junior to USC, then they didn't really give him that much of that opportunity. That's just not how that offense was designed, for them to showcase a larger workload for him. But I think, Graham, you nailed it. He has the widest range of outcomes, but I love that he can reach that top end. Aside from Trey Benson, who you're going to have to spend premium draft capital on, I'd say by the end, after the draft happens and when you're in your rookie drafts, I'm assuming that he's going to probably be going 109 a lot of times, unless, I don't know, Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. get first round draft capital. But I'm assuming Trey Benson's going to go somewhere in the late first.
Agreed.
Marshawn Lloyd, you won't have to spend that draft capital on, and you can still reach that kind of ceiling that Trey Benson has. Just from the analytical profiles, Trey Benson, Jalen Wright, and Marshawn Lloyd, all, whenever you look, you squint just right, look very, very similar. And so I'm very happy with whichever one of those three falls to me, scooping them up. Jacob nailed it, though. I think Jalen Wright probably is going to have the most niche role in the NFL, which makes me a little nervous. I think that's probably why you have him ranked at fourth and have Marshawn Lloyd ahead of him. But I'm excited about them, and the fact that you aren't going to have to spend premium draft capital on makes me even more excited.
At the end of the day with this class, like, I'm chasing ceiling. Like, I just want the guys that have a projectable ceiling. Like, in fantasy, what's the point of playing if we're not playing for ceiling? Like, that's what we're trying to win weeks. We're trying to, you know, have, his, you know, score more points than our, you know, opponents. In this class, if you're chasing ceiling, I mean, I think the two to me that stand out are Lloyd and Wright. Thomas, I was going to ask you, man, where, so as of right now, you mentioned that the first rookie running back coming off the board is in the eighth round. Would you take any of these guys higher than that would be my question? Or do you think that the markets are correct? Like, would you take Trey Benson or Tyjae Spears right now? I think that's kind of like the delineation point, that like RB20 spot ish.
So Spears is going at 17. I would take Brooks ahead of that. I would take Brooks, Benson, and Lloyd ahead of like Javonte Williams, who for some reason is still going RB16.
Oh, I'll make the case for Javonte Williams.
No,
I'll put my cape on for Javonte Williams.
No,
yeah, absolutely.
D E A D.
No, okay. All three Denver running backs last year finished in the top 12 of yards per route run at the position. The Sean Payton offense is an absolute machine for running back expected fantasy points. The percentage of expected
but he was still bad.
Their offense. Look, what did we just talk about? Here's the crazy thing about all this running back ACL discourse. You just said you'd take Jonathan Brooks out of Javonte Williams.
Yes.
Like this whole class, everybody talks about, and I like Jonathan Brooks just fine as a prospect. But we got, Trey Benson didn't produce, you know, until he was year three. Well, that's because he shredded his knee. You know, Marshawn Lloyd, he didn't do anything for a while. He shredded his knee. Blake Corum, he's inefficient in 2023. He shredded his knee. Oh, Javonte Williams sucks. He shredded his knee. That's why you got to take Jonathan Brooks, the guy with a currently shredded knee.
Right. The other guys. My like, point is,
I would like to take the guy who we just got through the season of being bad off a torn ACL.
But he wasn't.
The guy we're about to watch be bad off a torn ACL.
Javonte Williams wasn't tearing it up in his rookie year. We were disappointed in him. That was the whole discourse with Javonte in his first year.
History. Javonte Williams was quite good as a rookie. People were annoyed that Melvin Gordon wasn't going away, but he had really strong peripherals as a rookie. His success rate was low. His evasion rates were absolutely elite. He was still looked like a very promising back. He was being drafted in the second round of redraft, and then he tore his ACL. And last year, he was not explosive, but even prior to Sean Payton's arrival, his ability to draw targets on an early down basis has been extremely fantastic. He has absolutely out of this world tackle evasion, even going back to his college profile. I think he's honestly a fantastic value running back to target right now in terms of a guy who actually has a legitimate upside, three down profile in an offense that's entirely catered to throwing the ball 2 yards to running backs repeatedly. Like, I think it's a great situation. I like McLaughlin too in that situation. I really want to buy into the Denver backfield. So I had no idea we were going to talk about Javonte Williams today, I'll put on the cape for him hard.
I can't do it at RB16. Like, I would just wait and take. Like you said, I would take Jaleel. I would just wait. We've seen it. I'm just okay. I'm okay missing. I want the rookie, right, that I haven't seen yet over someone like Javonte. I just do. He's not explosive at this point. Yeah. Like, even when he catches the passes, at least last
year, the record, I actually have Benson and Brooks right ahead of him, but they're all on the same team. I do have Williams ahead of the rest.
I'm going to put my cape on. I'm going to talk all this mess, but never mind. I actually have him ranked over him.
I'm going to move him up.
There it is.
Hold on.
Decisions have been made.
You know what? Maybe when you stop dropping out, you can talk some shit. Okay?
This is such a good bit.
Stop dropping from the show, and then you can talk some smack to me. But...
By the way, Tom, this is minute 45 to 47 when you want to cut this all into a show.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. You already know.
Talking about running backs we've kind of left for dead, somebody who we haven't talked about at all tonight is Braylon Allen, who coming into the season, everybody had as RB1. And fall from grace.
Let's not use that term. That's overly.
Whenever I say everybody, I'm looking to get the majority of the fantasy community at large, and then I will throw everybody onto it. Is getting me in trouble a lot, as I have been learning. Whenever I try to be the voice of the Joe Schmo fantasy player who you're stealing money from in leagues because he's not doing well, that's the everyone I'm talking about. But with Braylon Allen still. He is somebody
ahead of Brooks, by the way. You son of a gun.
Graham, what are your thoughts on Braylon?
Yeah, I'm finishing charting him right now, so I don't have all of it done. He's going to be my six, though. Like, I can already tell you, he'll be RB6 on this class for me. I think it's really close. I've got a clear top two with Benson and Brooks, like you guys, and then Lloyd, Wright, and Estime and Quorum are kind of all there. I think Allen might sneak into the back end of that tier, but he'll probably be the start of the third tier. Obviously early breakout age was great from him, but just like all these guys, man, you don't get the full production profile except for Braylon Allen. The one thing obviously though is his freshman year 2021, right? Freshman year was definitely his best year. Lucas, you can speak to this more. What was the fall off from freshman to sophomore to junior year? Was there anything that you can put your cap on or anything?
I mean, the biggest change that happened with that Wisconsin staff was there was just coaching turmoil, but that didn't really change how he's being used. His second year, his zone and gap runs were flip-flopped. He was pretty balanced between zone and gap, then it became heavily gap. This season, they went back to heavily zone with Luke Fickell coming in. Yeah. And it just seemed like what he was as an 18-year-old is what he's been the entire time he's been in college.
Yeah,
and it doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, you can forgive it whenever it's a sophomore season and it looks a lot like the freshman season. It's like, oh, okay, he'll be even better as a junior. But he seemed to be even worse. And the really frustrating part is that we look at him as this big power back, but his essentially his break tackle or forced missed tackles and breaking tackle metrics just aren't there. And he doesn't have a good enough like explosive run rate to make up for it. So it just doesn't make sense that if you feel like you're going to be drafting this power running back, the second coming of Derrick Henry, as some people had him as a freshman.
More A.J. Dillon and like 2023 A.J. Dillon.
I think that that's a perfect comp. Like there's definitely going to be a place for him in the NFL, and there's going to be an offseason video taken where he's just showing off some massive quads and people are going to start swooning over Twitter about it. But it's just you come away feeling so disappointed. Like you look at him on tape from time to time, you look at him like just the person, just the player, and then all of the metrics behind it just leave you wanting so much more.
Yeah, he's the softest.
I just want him to 130
pound back ever.
Yeah, like I just want him to. I don't want someone to like make him angry on the sideline or something. Like I just because. Like, Even the times that I'm impressed with Braylon Allen, like we had Noah on the show and he likes Allen more than I like Allen. I mean, you like Allen more than I like Allen because I will not have him six. But and, you know, the things that he said and the things that I to some extent agree with that are impressive is like, oh, like he actually has pretty good footwork for a big guy, or like, oh, he actually like diagnoses the play pretty reasonably for someone who's new to the position. And it's like it's impressive that he's good at all the things you wouldn't expect him to be good at. You know what I would like to see out of the 6 foot 240 pound guy? How about you just like break a tackle and like maul a linebacker and like go head first into somebody's chest and like leave him with a little bit of pain, like just once, man. That's the struggle for me is just like how you know, like mass times force equals whatever. I don't know. I didn't take physics past grade 11. Something acceleration, whatever it is. There's not a lot of like force to the mass sometimes, where it feels like sometimes he doesn't know like that he's the biggest, baddest dude on the field and he can lower the boom at any time.
Right.
Can I get your take on the other fallen Devy darling? I'm assuming that it's not going to go well because I kind of like this guy, but you haven't brought him up yet. Will Shipley, do you have a take on Will Shipley?
I think I've got 3 games left to Allen and maybe 2 left to Shipley. I'll probably take it back. Shipley will be my 6 over Allen.
Okay, we're back up. We're back
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's where I'll land. Allen, to me, you mentioned the footwork, and this is a reason I like Estime. He's 225, but he looks 235. I don't know if that makes any sense. Yeah. But Estime actually runs with power. Like there's a end of the game against Clemson, he just like caught a check down, and there's like this little DB hanging off him. He like picks him up, throws him onto the ground. I'm like, I would love for Braylon Allen to do that once. Like I have not seen that once from him. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can develop that. Maybe it's a coaching thing. I really have no idea, but the physical traits with him are sick. Thomas, I remember I was messaging with you like in January. I was like, dude, Braylon Allen, like sick production profile. Like one of the only running backs in this class with a sick production profile. He's 238.
Yeah.
I started watching him. I'm like, oh.
Graham and I were having a little Braylon Allen love fest in the DMs. And then
I started watching him. I
was like, it was like a couple months later. I was like, I think we might have been wrong.
I always get nervous whenever I see like Devy people falling in love with a player that's not from like Georgia or Alabama, because just immediately I'm just like, oh, you guys are gonna get David Belled so hard. So like my like red flag has always been up with Braylon Allen, but I was cautiously optimistic. I hadn't watched that much of him, and then I was in Chicago a week before the NFL season, staying with a buddy of mine who's a Wisconsin grad, and so we're watching the first game of the new season. He's like really excited. He thinks, you know, Fickell and Longo are in town and they're going to win the Big Ten West. And, you know, he was sorely disappointed. So we're sitting there. I'm having my first slice of Chicago deep dish pizza, excited to watch Braylon Allen, the 17-year-old, live and in stereo. And I'm watching this guy and I'm just like, Zach, man, like, I don't think this guy's good. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to like this guy. And he was promising me all day. He's like, I'm so excited for you to watch Braylon. Like, this is going to be your guy.
I will say he upped his pass catching in this last year. Granted, I will tell you that I'm box score looking when I look at that. I can't tell you how he caught those passes or what the situation was.
Graham could make me look like a fool because he knows more about this than I do. But my note is I've never seen someone's pass protection I've hated more in my life. I just think he lunges at guys like crazy. It's a disaster. Well,
he passed pros fine. Like it's, I did.
His pass pro is ridiculous.
It's pass pro. I always say pass pro is like one of the most teachable things, especially when you're huge. So he has that going for him, but it's mostly technique. And Blake Corum is so good at squaring his hips to defenders and getting his hands in the right place. Like, he's obviously not big, but he's really small and he gets low and he understands like how to load his size. Whereas Braylon Allen's just like a big piece of lumber out there. Like, he's just getting pushed around. So to me, it's technique. We brought up Will Shipley real quick. To me, he's on that like Devontae Freeman, Wayne Gallman spectrum where he's like really kind of good at everything, but not great at any one thing. Like, he's fine. He's fine in pass protection. We're talking pass protection. He's good, pretty good receiver. I don't think he's a standout runner. They have this guy who's huge on their team. I think he's a better runner. His name's slipping my mind right now. They split carries last year, Shipley and this huge guy. But just watching both their carries this past year, Shipley to me stood out as a little more explosive than I thought. And I don't have the full numbers, like I said, just yet, finishing charting, but a little more explosive and a little more shifty than I thought too. The missed tackles force numbers are going to be pretty good on him when he comes out. So I've been taking Shipley like early third round. He's been a target of mine.
Yeah.
An early third round. And I like that price a lot.
Lucas has it. It's Phil Maffa.
Phil Maffa. Yeah. Yeah. That dude. He is. Yeah. He's sick. Maffa. He's huge.
He's a big Debbie darling right now too. Yeah. I think with Will Shipley, that's something that I don't know if it's really a skill for running backs, but he just has this clutch gene where he could suck for so much of the game, but whenever Clemson desperately needed something on offense because it has not been good these past two seasons, Will Shipley just comes out of nowhere and says, I got you all, get on my back, and just goes in, scores a clutch touchdown at the end. And you're just thinking the whole time, where was this the rest of the game? Like, I have no idea if you can chart stuff out and just leave the fourth quarter or the last 5 minutes as its own thing. But I think people would really like Will Shipley a lot more than, and his highlights are, gosh, you gotta love it. I think it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Clemson and Syracuse were playing. And just that last drive, Will Shipley had like five highlight plays in a row where he just forces Clemson into a win. You gotta love stuff like that. I am very disappointed with what his analytical profile looks like, but he's still fun to watch. And Thomas, I think he was what, your second Devy pick ever?
Yeah, my first one was Quinn Ewers, so that Devy team is dead. But I'll say my
you want a crazy story. My second ever Devy pick, second C2C pick. And it's been a journey of a lifetime with Jaden Daniels. And that was like a butt of a joke for 3 years of like, man, did I sink this pick? And wait, what are we boomerang
back? We're back up, baby.
That's C2C for you, baby.
I'll be honest, though. I did not see Shipley running 4.38 at his pro day. I thought he was more of a 4.5 guy.
Do you have a comp form? Because I have two very specific ones. And I'd be interested to hear if anyone has like a real, and I've been on record as saying that I hate comps in general, but this is one that I actually feel pretty good about.
I don't have a comp for him. I'm very much like, if a comp comes to me while I'm watching, I'll say it. ETN for Benson was like the first thing I thought of watching them.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't have one for Shipley. What do you got?
So for Will Shipley, I have Kevin Faulk or Deion Lewis I see how his role. He seems like the prototypical New England Patriots third down back, the guy that they stick in, like Lucas said, fourth quarter. He James White's his way through it, though not as good as a route runner, but can handle some of those third down carries. If they need to give him an LDD carry, they can, but he's a guy that coaches will trust. They'll put him in on that third down. He's a 2-minute drill guy, and he has a little bit more juice than those other guys. I didn't think he ran with as much power, but you're sitting here telling me he ran with enough power for me to be excited about. This is a guy that if we get third to fourth round, man, he could be a coach's dream, and I feel like he can fit that fantasy-relevant Deion Lewis, Kevin Faulk-esque role.
Well, what I really liked about Shipley is that he has a thing, like, to me, with potential, like, it's either him or Bucky Irving to me is the best, like, long down and distance running back in the class as a receiver, two-minute drill situations as a route runner. Now, Bucky's combine, like, I think really tanked whatever you could dream beyond that. But with Shipley, you know, he ends up doing much better there. So, like, my hope for Shipley is some team drafts him as a third down, two-minute drill back right away. And that he ends up being able to get on the field on that basis. And then if something happens around him, like, he's already on the field versus, like, some of these guys who are going to get drafted as straight backups. It's like, if you're not active on game days and you're not on the field, then maybe that, you know, it's like a Zach Evans last year where, like, Kyron goes down, he gets the injury, but he was just didn't have a role in the team. And so they end up bringing other guys ahead of him. My hope with Shipley is if he's playing 20-30% of the snaps, which I think he has, like, a reasonable pathway to, because I think he has some skill sets in the receiving game. Like, maybe he just gets lucky and, you know, the guy gets hurt beside him and they say, all right, try your hand at it, Will. And then he ends up running away with it for a month or so. That's kind of why I'm so bullish on him, is I think he has one thing that he's very, very good at. I really like him.
Well, and he's big enough, right? He's not one of the 5'8", you know, 5'9" backs that barely break 200.
That's my only issue, is he's like, well, because he's like 5'11", 205, which is like a little upright for me, which I think causes him to go down a little easy. Like, because, like, I was trying to think of a comp too. And originally, like, one that I'd come up with was, like, potentially like a Duke Johnson as like a receiving back who had volume in college, but I don't know if he's really going to do that in the NFL. But Duke was like compact, like in a way that Shipley is a little bit more slender.
Yeah, he's a little lanky.
He's maybe built a little bit like a slot receiver at this point.
Yeah, but, you know, there's something to be said, though, that he did carry the volume. You know, I know the Moffa guy, he's a Devy darling, like you said. He's going to be a beast next year. But, you know, there's something to be said that he did carry the load, like you were talking about in the last couple of years with this offense being so, so bad, at least for their standards.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, look, we said we would keep it as close to an hour as we can. We did have one question we said we would get to that Andrew asked, like, right off the cup. So I want to hit that, address a couple of comments, and then get out of here. So let's address Andrew A., who's been here since RIP. Maybe off topic, but wondering if any of you are high on any sleeper RBs in either draft or in general. Don't want to spend a lot of capital, but current RB room is Zamir and Tajay. Damn, he does need a sleeper.
Definitely.
Gave my main one, my really, really cheap one outside of all of, like, the busted up vets. If we're looking for someone a little bit more fun, my guy would be Jaleel McLaughlin. I would cite again, like, the absolutely ridiculous expected fantasy point profile, that the Denver offense created to running backs. If they are remotely more functional this year, I think someone in that backfield is going to be a big hit. And while I'm more bullish on Javonte than the rest of the crew here, it's less Javonte centric and more backfield centric. So I like a lot of what McLaughlin put on tape last year.
For what it's worth, I'm still a Javonte guy. He was my RB2 in that draft class. Loved him. It's getting rough out here, though. I will say we got to be adjusting to new information.
Like, you know, 15 carries inside the five.
Strongly held opinions.
Just that we're aware. Like, I don't have him, like, in the fourth round. I'm ranked, like, the eighth round. I'm not like trying to be ridiculous here, but I'm saying I don't think the dream's dead. That's all. He'll be a big bet.
Yeah. So my running back strategy is, like, I want basically, like, the barbell approach. Like, I want one of the top elite guys in my top eight, and then I want, like, nothing in the middle. That's usually, like, Javonte.
Right.
And I want a bunch of these, like, contingent upside slash injury guys slash, you know, second and rookie picks, basically. One sleeper I've been trying to get on my teams that I really need running back depth on is Izzy Abanikanda.
Nice.
21. He's not even 22 years old yet. Brees is obviously a beast, but, man, what if the Jets don't draft somebody and he's just, like, rolling into the season at RB2? He's, like, free right now. I've been flipping, like, late fourths, packaging some late fourths with some, you know, bullshit assets with him, just trying to get him. Yeah. He might stink. Yeah, he might stink, man. Like, I don't know if I wasn't super, super high on him watching his tape last year, like, didn't chart him. I will this summer, but there was enough in the preseason, enough during the regular season for me to buy in a little bit. And, you know, if he really is just the RB2 there, like, you know, he's one injury away.
So I'll save my sleeper because I don't know if it's a sleeper, but Lucas has one running back he wants to mention before we get out of here. But for me, it's Dylan Johnson right out of Washington. He's a guy that can catch the ball, like over 170 catches, I believe, coming out of college. Was part of a dynamic Washington offense once he got there and was insanely productive, over 80 yards per game, averaged over a touchdown per game in that offense. Can really move between the tackles, which NFL teams really love. Has some speed to get to the outside. Goes with enough balance, just isn't that high-end elite athletic talent that maybe might hold him back. But this is the kind of guy that if you're taking a late round shot and you possibly want David Montgomery, Dylan Johnson from Washington is very David Montgomery-esque to me in how he moves. So if you want a late, late guy that you're definitely not even going to have to draft, that's my ultimate sleeper pick. Cause I'm not going to pick Garendo again. Cause Jacob might actually, the look, like, I feel like if Jacob rolls his eyes back that hard again, he'll fall out of his chair if I mention it again with how hard.
The reason why Dylan Johnson can't succeed is the hoodies indoors is ridiculous.
It's a swag issue for you.
I can't handle it's not swaggy. It's just not a good look.
That's what I mean.
Like, if you want to wear the hoodie outdoors in the rain in Seattle, like, I get that. You know, I live just a couple hours north of Seattle. I understand it's a rainy place. But you're telling me you're going into a dome stadium in a hoodie? What are you, Bill Belichick? It's ridiculous.
Oh, my goodness. Like a winner. Lucas, you had one running back you wanted to hit, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah. Speaking of Bill Belichick, he was just at Washington in his hoodie. Yeah. So love that picture circulating around. And as a sleeper, not going to really expand on it too much, Frank Gore Jr., I think somebody you should have to pay attention to. His real game athletic scores are just off the charts. And I think he has enough production to where
nepotism. He might
be able to do something good. And nepotism. Yay.
We know it. Hey, look, nepotism matters in the NFL. The N stands for nepotism. So, I mean, yeah, they.
That's only in coaching circles, Graham.
Yep. And Graham, you've mentioned Estime a couple of times, and yeah. I absolutely love hearing positive things about Audric Estime, especially after the combine, whenever I was feeling a little down. It's just great to reminisce a little bit, especially for somebody who ran so slow. But his breakaway or his explosive run rate is higher than Jonathan Brooks. It's higher than Braylon Allen, higher than Bucky Irving. Stuff like that gets me really excited. Plus, you know what you're getting. He's just a massive dude who actually breaks tackles and punishes people. And a comp for me is Michael Bush. It's a little bit of an older comp, but that's just stuff like that. It makes me really happy. Why do you like Audric Estime so much?
Yeah, Estime to me is like if AJ Dillon were to lose 20 pounds and were actually good at football. A really good feet. Like I mentioned, he's I don't think he's elusive at all in the second and third level, but he's got great power. You know, he gets to his top speed fast, and you know, he ran 4.71, ran 4.58, I want to say, or 4.6 at his pro day, something like that. So you know, maybe we can hang our hat on that he's a little bit faster, had a bad day at the combine. He jumped out of the gym too for his size too. So there's he's definitely pretty athletic. I just think for these types of backs though, man, like he's watching Estime is like probably like in terms of figuring out where he wins was maybe the easiest watch, you know, like we know he's never going to be a big pass catcher. That's just facts.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, look, we've got some sleepers. We got some in-depthness here. Let's sign this out here. Jacob, I know you got to get out of here. Think about thinking. You just dropped a massive article. That link is going to end up in the show description. Everything you're going to want for how he attacks the draft class is in there. It's a phenomenal read as always. You can find him at Jacob Sanderson. Of course, Lucas Gilbert here with me every single week. We are helping revamp the Full Tilt YouTube channel into a Dynasty Points YouTube channel. Everything left over is going to be heading over there. So Lucas has helped me head that up. And of course, Graham, always creating, always working at Fantasy Points. When does that yards created come back?
Looking like officially. Next Wednesday officially for the data dump. So I've got
this is life changing.
Yeah, I've got some charting to do this weekend to kind of finish up the class. But yeah.
Like I said, I told you people would be excited. We have multiple comments tonight about, you know, people just being ecstatic that you are bringing.
I joke about it being life changing, but it is literally changing in the sense that I did my first tier of rookie drafts all last week, deep dives, which of course features zero running back. And then I was debating, like, I'm going to do the next two series going to be in the middle class. So I was going to basically just split it, one into running backs, one into receivers. And I was going to write about running backs this weekend. But now that I know that Yards Creative is coming on a Wednesday, I'm going to write about receivers and then write about running backs the week after. So it is actually changing my life.
I'm so happy that we got to talk about it and that I got to let you know that it was missed and that you decided to get it back, man. So for myself and for everyone in the Dynasty community, we appreciate it. The hard work and the charting and the fact you're going to go back and do last year's is it's underrated, man. So much love for that. And remember, everything at fantasypoints.com can be had here on YouTube as well for all the content. Like I said, Scott Barrett's tight end article just came out. You're going to want to go and grab that. Remember to check in on your loved ones, even if you're not sure that they need it. Remember that clear eyes, full hearts can never lose. Your best days, well, goddamn, they're always spent tilting. Good night, everybody.